You are listening to episode number 121 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Taser size, you are listening to another episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. As always, I am your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben. Joining me, the man who is very, very tired from New York Comic Con, which was just past weekend, Mr. Arnold Alfred. Arnold, welcome to the show.
You.
And the man who was possibly at New York Comic Con as a ninja, I'm not sure. Taser, welcome to the show.
Hey, how'd you like a Hawaiian punch? Sure.
You a cult leader now? And of course, the man who's probably laughing like a devil when you saw Derek Jeter go down, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome to the show.
It made my week right there just to see that happen. I was waiting for that old rickety bastard to finally fall over, and it finally happened. So, yay! Yeah.
Too bad for Tom Brady.
All he has to do is not the championship thing because they've. About the same now. Anyways.
You mad, bro? You mad? Really, bro?
He's mad because his team sucks and they fired the manager.
I still can't believe we lost that game, but that's another conversation for another time.
Just like Kuhan
yes,
told
we have
you,
to do a sports podcast and then let Brian rant.
Yes. Just like
oh my
Kuhan
God.
Coaching.
They couldn't even win out the clock on Seattle. It's just, no, I'm not doing this.
All right. We are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast and we are three episodes behind the core cast. We're going to catch up with them.
Yeah, bitches.
We are a weekly Marvel podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether that's comics, movie, video games, TV shows, and more. Let's get right into it. As I alluded to, Arnold was at New York Comic Con. Arnold, before we get to the actual news, give us a brief. How crazy was it?
New York Comic Con is fucking crazy, man. I don't know what the final numbers are yet. They haven't announced and said what the final attendance was. But it was sold out for at least a month, like hardcore sold out. On Sunday, I think, they had to halt letting people in because people weren't moving upstairs fast enough, so they had to stop letting people in so more people could go upstairs before they let more people in downstairs, or else people would have shut down the whole building, which nobody wanted. I heard at least on Saturday there was roughly 65,000 people, and that was
Woo!
Just... And it's jam-packed, you know, tons of shit going on left and right, panels going on all over the place. You know, the entire cast of The Walking Dead was there, Christopher Lloyd was there, Adam West, Burt Ward, and Rice, you know, just names out the ass. Randomness, Stan Lee, I saw Stan Lee twice, my roommate got to meet Stan Lee, ran into Bruce Timm again. But yeah, I was also working at a booth. For a good chunk of the con as well. I was working at a booth called Anthony's Comic Book Art. Just selling some art pieces and prints and things like that. But all in all, it was good times. I didn't get as many pictures as I did. I did cosplay on Saturday as Ends of the Earth Spider-Man. I got to meet Dan Slott, who was super excited to see my costume. Maybe I'll try and throw pictures of that on the website or
You have to show
Facebook.
The spider armor, dude. You have to show this.
Yeah,
the spider armor and the $20.99 outfit.
Oh, definitely, sure. Some good picks, yeah. I'll look through and see if I see any Spider-Man ones. I actually met a kid dressed up as Ultimate Spider-Man at at the Marvel booth, and he looked like he was about the age of Miles Morales, like he was going to be any more than like 12 or 13 years old, but this kid impressed the shit out of me, like, because I saw him and I was like, fuck it, I'm going to try and recreate this costume. So I went and I asked his dad if it was okay if I took a picture with him. His dad was like, sure. So I asked the kid, I was like, hey, do you want to take a picture with me? I would like to recreate a cover of, you remember the masculine cover? And without any hesitation, he's like, oh, you mean the Spider-Man issue, the Spider-Man issue number 2, the variant cover? I was like, yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All right. He was so excited. I'll put a picture of that up there too. Once I get it, it was good times. It, you know, craziness, craziness, craziness. No matter how hard you try, you're never going to see everything. One of my highlights was meeting Dan Slott. Another one was meeting the lead singer of a band I'm really into. Also got to hear and see the guy who did the voice of Yakko in Animaniacs, who's also currently doing the voice of Donatello in the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and did the voice of Raphael in the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon in the 80s. So that was pretty cool. I'm a big fan of voice actors. I'm sure I've mentioned that here a lot. So getting to see and meet those voice actors is always fun. What else? Yeah, but all around good times. I'm tired as fuck. I think out of the whole weekend, I got maybe 6 to 8 hours of sleep top through the course of like 3 or 4 days. But yeah, it was good times. I had a blast. Can't wait to do it again. I already threw up a post on Facebook saying 364 days till New York Comic Con 2013.
Yep. Well, hopefully. All right. Well, that was.
You know what? I just want to say this one thing. Isn't it weird that, like, a Comic-Con is one of the few places where an adult man can say, can I take a picture with your kid? And, you know, the parent has no problem with it, you know? That's, like, fucking bizarre.
Comic-Con is also the only other place in the world aside from a gay bar or a drag club where you can go to the bathroom and see a man making sure that his makeup looks okay.
I still feel awkward whenever I see
and nobody bats an eye. Nobody bats an eye.
I still feel awkward whenever I take a picture of a girl who might be underage. I'm like, I don't know if I should be doing this, but I'm going to be doing this anyway. Click.
Feel guilty, maybe?
She could be 16. She said she's 18. I don't know. Anyways.
Actually, Comic-Con is also the only place where you can see a 16-year-old girl dressed up as a 13-year-old boy and think, hey, cool costume, instead of, oh, that chick, she might be gay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of stuff like that, there was an awful lot of crossplay this year, like more than I've ever seen at any other Comic-Con.
I heard lots about that.
How many Lokis?
How many Lokis? Oh, good Lord. I saw a wealth of Lokis, a wealth of Banes, a lot of Nightwings.
Yeah, I heard Loki was actually pretty popular for some
reason. Yeah, a lot of Nightwings.
People love Loki. The fangirls love Loki. Everyone loves
Loki. The guy cosplaying as Loki looked almost exactly like Tom Hiddleston. Like, the hair, everything, his face, facial features, everything, he looked almost, for a minute, I thought it was him.
Have any men that would show up?
You had to jump his bones, weren't you, Arnold? You would be like, take me.
But yeah, a lot of guys dressed up as girl characters. Lots of girls dressed up as male characters.
Yeah.
I saw a group of guys. You know, I've seen it before, but this year there was a lot, like more than I've ever seen. What are some highlights? I saw a group of guys dressed up as all of the male characters from the first Street Fighter.
Nice.
Wait, what'd you see?
Their Guile hair. The hair that he made was
nice.
Somebody should have had the Guile thing playing in the background.
that was a good group of people. I saw a mom and her 3 daughters were all at Comic-Con. Not a boy in sight. Mom, 3 daughters, each one of them dressed up as a different Ninja Turtle. Which I thought was fucking, you know, I love seeing the families get into it. That's one of my particular favorites. You know, when the whole family comes out and they really get into it. I saw a great Star Wars family. You know, little girl dressed as Ahsoka. The little boy was either Darth Vader or I think he might have been Darth Vader. But yeah, it was really nice. And Kids Day is also a fun day because you know seeing the kids experience it is also always fun because you're almost on the same exact wow factor level as you and a 30-year-old man or is, you know, just as excited about something as the 10-year-old standing next to him, you know? Comic-Con just feels like home.
I can't wait to do my Ric Flair cosplay. All right.
Really, are you?
Cosplaying as Ric Flair?
Awesome. Yes, I have a robe. I have a robe. I have a blonde wig. All I need to figure out is how to put the glitter in the right areas and spell
name. Oh my god!
You'll never hear a straight man say outside of Comic Con.
What? What was that, Taser?
You have to do wrinkles. Because Ric Flair is older than shit, so you need to have wrinkles.
I'm already fat, so there's stuff sagging everywhere. So.
Well, you also then you have to pale yourself up because you know Ric Flair is a hell of a lot paler than
oh,
you are.
Oh, he can be tanned. Anyways, enough of me visualizing as if I was Ric Flair. Let's go to Brian with our New York Comic Con news roundup. Brian, hit us with the highlights.
Do your job.
Holy shit, it's been a busy, busy little convention, but we do have some news for our fellow listeners, all four of you. Starting off at the top of the lineup, out of New York Comic Con, we have a announcement of a new slate of Season 1 graphic novels being put out by Marvel Comics featuring the likes of Iron Man, Thor, and Wolverine. The Iron Man book will be done by Howard Chaykin and Gerald Perel. That's an odd name, but okay. Wolverine, done by Ben Blacker, and Selma Espin. Again, I don't know where the hell those names came from. And also being done is Thor, who should be done by Matt Sturgis and Pepe Larraz. Yes, that is a real name.
Adding more to the Season 1 line of original graphic novels, which earlier this year they did Daredevil, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man, Fantastic Four.
Ant-Man was thrown
Ant-Man,
in there,
Doctor
too.
Doctor Strange, Hulk. There was another one earlier that I'm missing, but X-Men.
Right,
that's the only one that I own besides my Doctor Strange one. So adding more to these original graphic novels of origin stories, which, you know, I was, like, the thing with these characters, like, we kind of know these origins already.
This is kind of just, like, pointless reboots, really.
Well, maybe not everybody has had read the origins, and this, like, somebody sees it at a Barnes & Nobles and they pick it up.
Right.
Or Amazon or the Christmas gifts. I've already said it before, season one graphic novels are great Christmas gifts for people who kind of like comics and just want a little taste, but not everything, like the Wednesday Warriors like we do. What's the next thing up, Brian?
Okay, well, actually, one quick addition before we move on. Cullen Bunn will be doing a new Deadpool book, Deadpool Killustrated, where he goes around killing literary classics such as Moby Dick, Sherlock Holmes, and Dracula.
Oh, that sounds hysterical.
Breaking the fourth wall all over the place. But yeah, that'll be happening soon too, which I will totally keep you guys updated on. Moving out of the realm of books into the realm of movies, we have some new news coming off of the Marvel Cinematic slate. What we get is some tidbits from the Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain America, the Winter Soldier. On the Guardian side of things, we learn that certain characters are being emphasized over others. That is to say that Star-Lord, Gamora, and Drax the Destroyer are being highlighted over Groot and Rocket Raccoon. Sadly. You know, I don't know why you couldn't do a whole movie with those two and just make it a blockbuster hit. I don't know why.
A tree and a forest pet.
Yeah. Sadly enough, though, this means that their backstories are going to get retooled and the costumes will be changed, so they might look different than how we remember them, sadly. And also, there's a rumor spreading that Adam Warlock may, in fact, make an appearance in the movie somewhere. So, yeah, cool. Moving on from that to Captain America the Winter Soldier, there is news about trying to track down the person who will play Sharon Carter, the descendant of Peggy Carter, Captain America's first love, and the eponymous S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent 13. Now, there has been some names flying back and forth. There was a list of about five people, I think, who were on the running.
Last week.
Yes, yeah, last week. I'm sorry, I wasn't here for that.
Exactly, because you're a bitch. Keep going on.
I would have preferred Allison Brie to be the front runner, but it looks to be that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, better known to some of you as Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, among other things, is the top of the short list to play Sharon Carter, Agent 13, in the new Captain America sequel.
Also known as the niece of Peggy Carter, which makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what they're going to do with the family in there, but there's no way they can pass her off as the niece of Peggy Carter.
They'll probably like granddaughter or something.
Yeah, I'd say like grandniece, maybe. That was my suggestion. I'm like, grandniece, that might work.
It doesn't.
You know?
Hey, Peggy, your granddaughter's looking awfully hot here. Mind if I tap that since I never got to tap you?
It's like I'm living vicariously through your hot grandniece.
It doesn't really matter as long as she's related somehow.
I like granddaughter better. That just works for my mind.
Great granddaughter. Or is that too young?
Okay, so, and on the news of a villain being cast, there's no real name being tossed around as far as the official villain, but some actors are being thrown around. One in particular, forgive me if I butcher the name, Nicolaj Coster-Waldau, is up for a possible villain role in Captain America, competing against Josh Holloway from Lost. You know him as Sawyer. And those two are in the front running to play the primary villain role, I suppose, in Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier. Although, I guess, going by the name, we all really know who the villain is going to be, you know, unless you're a complete idiot.
It'll be okay, that moving. Dog barking.
Yeah. No. He wants to share his opinion. Bring him up. Let's see what he has to say. No? Okay. Moving on from that, we have news from Joss Whedon's S.H.I.E.L.D. show. Yes, that's right. At a panel held at New York Comic Con, there was news being tossed around that Philip Coulson, yeah,
woo!
Everyone's favorite everyman from Marvel Cinematic, will in fact live in the S.H.I.E.L.D. television series. Through what means, flashback, life model decoy, we don't know.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, but
there you go.
That being said, it looks like we're going to have Coulson back for a little while longer with us, just on the small screen instead of the big screen. And personally, I'm okay with that, because Phil Coulson is a boss.
Yes. Yes.
What up?
Man.
You want to step to Phil Coulson? He'll blast your ass right out the helicarrier. Phil Coulson don't care. Okay. More from the Disney, the Marvel News movie block. We have confirmation that Iron Man 3 and Thor the Dark World will both be released in 3D. No real surprise there. But we do have some release dates being tossed around. Some are unchanged, but some are refreshed. So just to cover all the bases, I'll run down the entire list for you. Iron Man 3 is due out May 3rd, 2013. Thor the Dark World is released on November 8th, 2013. Captain America the Winter Soldier on April 4th, 2014. And Guardians of the Galaxy on August 1st, 2014. And the latest addition to the slate, Ant-Man, released on November 6th, 2015. Yeah, that's right. Ant-Man.
Oh, honey, I shrunk the scientist. That just sounds like a bad idea.
I know, but you know what? I saw some of a storyboard artist recreation of the test footage they showed, and from what it seemed, it didn't look too bad, I guess.
It's gonna suck.
There's only so much you can do with Ant-Man. I'm not going to bullshit myself. There's only so much you can do.
What did you see?
Well, no, it was one person who was sitting at Comic-Con when they ran test footage from a test reel for Ant-Man. He recreated it as a storyboard, like a flipbook type thing, and did it as a whole running thing. And it pretty much just showed Ant-Man infiltrating like a hallway and taking out a couple guards before moving on. It wasn't anything spectacular or groundbreaking, but it basically just showed how he would use his abilities to basically just kick ass and take names, which includes a lot of spontaneous shrinking and then regrowing to hit people and then disappear.
That's what she said.
And he comes back again. Yeah. Oh, for God's sakes. So.
Yeah, see, now, the problem there is, you know, that might actually market back to the 60s shit. Well, you would have to, because Ant-Man was designed to be a serious character back in the 60s. And
he wasn't
joke. Well, he wasn't. He wasn't intended to be, but his shtick today would be, you know, because I can shrink down to the size of an ant and then speed up and grow to the size of a regular human, and you never see it because it's so fast. Woo! I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I'm fearful. That's all.
It's on YouTube. They created a video for it. You can find it on YouTube.
Okay, then I'm gonna have to look that up, and then I'll give you probably.
It's nothing spectacular. It's black and white drawings against like a flipbook type thing. It's nothing spectacular, but you know, it gets the point across, I guess.
Why has it got to be black and white? Huh?
Why can't it be white and black, Taser?
Oh, see, there you go.
Okay.
You got to get all racial up in this piece. You
hey,
mad, bro?
I'm not getting
you're
racist.
Mad?
You're getting racist. Oh, you can't be racist because you're black? That's racist, dude.
Yes, exactly. I never
it's racist.
Racist.
So is that all the news from New York Comic Con?
All I have on my end, yeah, but I thought you had some stuff you wanted to talk about.
Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova are getting new number ones. Guardians of the Galaxy by Bendis and Steve McNiven, and Nova by Jeff Loeb, and his frequent collaborator, Ed McGuinness. That's pretty much it. And I will look at Guardians of the Galaxy. I am not touching Nova with a 10-foot fucking pole.
You don't like Nova?
I never liked Nova.
Yeah, I don't want to be Kyle Rayner. Sorry.
I've never, like, I see all these people on the Twitter, all the nuts Twitter. About Nova, Nova, Nova. And like, I feel like most of them are posers because of the comic book and maybe they didn't read the comic book, but because they see a whole bunch of people liking it, they don't want to be left out, so they're going to be posers. Yeah, that's right. If you know, I'm talking about you. So I don't have an affinity for the character at all. I don't have an affinity for the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's cool that a movie.
You just don't get Marvel Cosmic, dude. Okay.
Whatever, bro. I'm only gonna check this out, and Taser's gonna hate me saying this simply because of, one, it's Steve fucking McNiven, and the guy hasn't done interiors for, it hasn't been a while, but, you know.
I think the last thing he did was Nemesis for Millar, I think.
No, he did Captain America last year.
I don't read Captain America,
yeah, so. Yeah, when they numbered the book, he was the artist for the first arc, and then he disappeared again, did covers. But yeah, I mean, I'll definitely check it out simply because it's McNiven drawing interiors again.
So you can care less about the character. It's just the guy doing the book.
Well, that doesn't say I wouldn't care. I couldn't come to care about the characters later on. That has to be a hook.
Is it the new teenage kid too? It's not like Richard Rider or nothing?
No, I'm talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm talking about Guardians. I'm talking about Nova. Not for every character, because I have no history of them, so I have no connection to them. So the only thing.
Yeah, but if it's a new book, I understand it. That's fine. You know, that this will be your entrance into another facet of Marvel Comics.
And I may like them afterwards. Who knows? But.
Or you may go, well, dude, you're leaving books because certain guys are leaving them. And you've admitted to such.
Well, yeah.
Again, there's my point. But I don't want to degrade this because we know that A-Train wants to go sleepy bye.
Yeah, so. All right. Well, anyways, I am looking forward to both, not Nova, but I will definitely at least look at Guardians of the Galaxy, and such and such and such. Good for the season one books. Why is Doctor Strange or Black Panther not getting a movie but fucking Ant-Man is? That makes no sense to me.
Maybe they'll introduce them through Ant-Man to pad out the character's non-existent excitement.
Oh god. That would be an odd, like, oh, it's Black Panther. Played by that black guy who's always the African in every single movie.
Hey, that guy is a great African.
Oh, I'm not.
Don Cheadle?
No. Jamon Houston, I think, is who's
talking about. Yeah. Who's the guy in Amistad? That guy. That's him. Yeah, okay, him. Yeah.
I'm Hansu.
Gladiator.
Yes. Anytime I think black African dude, I think him.
The guy from Push who worked with Chris Evans previously.
You can call me
the guy from Africa who plays black African?
You can call me racist, but when I think black African, I think him as the only guy. Because that guy.
He's the only African in Hollywood.
Yes. Well, no, the guy who played Heimdall, he could do it, I guess.
You
know who would be an excellent Black Panther?
Who?
Did any of y'all ever see, what was that HBO series about the jail?
Oz?
What?
Oz,
yes. Remember Adebisi?
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Oh, my God. No.
Yes.
I can't.
The guy who played Adebisi in Oz could make it awesome.
Oh,
King T'Challa.
You need to, like, cast that shit right now. Oh, my God.
You got to see it. I'll link it, and you'll laugh.
So, what do y'all think about the New York Comic Con news? So I can move on.
Good stuff. It's all cool, I guess. I don't really
thought it was
to a lot of the year one stuff, so. But the art in the Thor books looks pretty cool.
And you, Taze, you just generally don't give a fuck.
I was a bit, some of that, well, the stage one, whatever,
season
you know,
one.
Stuff. Season, couldn't care less. Look, origins and, you know, retellings and, I'm not going to bother with it. I don't care. The Guardians and the Nova stuff is really where most of my concern was. And, well, you can kind of guess how I feel about the Nova stuff. And the Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm not exactly saddened, but a bit perturbed that Groot and Rocket Raccoon are going to be not.
I am Groot.
You know, I'm a bit disappointed, but I can understand it because, well, that's just more special effects that they have to render. And if they don't have to spend like $300 million for the movie, yeah, let's not spend $300 million for
the movie. Well, yeah, I mean, it's like the thing with, like, if you, with the commentary for the Avengers, Joss is like, we wanted to put more Hulk in, but it's just too fucking expensive to do
that. Yeah, exactly. I understand that. I do understand that. But,
I'm sure he'll have great moments though.
I hope. That's all I can say.
He'll be like the Hulk for the cosmic. If they're gonna do it that way.
Oh, I would love to see Groot and Hulk square off. That would be amazing.
Hulk would annihilate Groot.
No, I'm talking like Avengers Hulk. Like the one from the movies.
Yeah, he would still, like, I mean, sure, Groot can grow back, but I'm pretty sure Hulk would still smash the shit out of him.
So then why even propose, like, the Hulk if he's gonna get the shit kicked out of him? Why would you do that?
He's the thing who doesn't talk, but he's kind of a powerhouse in terms of that set.
Leading a trail of false promises.
How about you kindly shut the front door?
How about you kindly make me, bitch?
Arnold's falling asleep, so let's move on. Let's move on to our... As we enter Marvel Now, the first book of the new quote-unquote era, our book of the week this week is Uncanny Avengers number 1. It's by Rick Remender, art by John Cassaday, as Taser. You'll learn why Taser is going to laugh maniacally.
So crazy.
In a second. So basically, this issue takes place after AVX. Scott Summers is still in jail, and we get to see Logan's funeral. Give a eulogy at Professor Xavier's eulogy, and how we failed his dream. Yada yada yada. Meanwhile, Havoc, aka Alex Summers, lays some truth down on his older brother. Right? Scott is the older one.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, laid down some truth on his older brother. And Captain America wants to recruit Alex Summers to be a leader for a new Avengers team, saying, like, at the end of AVX 12, he has ignored mutants' problems for too long, and he wants to do something about it. So this is his proposal to put Alex as the lead, and how Alex says, I'm not Professor X, I'm my brother, and look how both of those turned out, sort of putting the reluctant guy in charge. Meanwhile, is it Avalanche, the guy's name, shows up? Who I believe is the same guy who you can see getting his head cut out and replaced with something else in the first page. More head cutting to come in a bit. Tax New York City, Thor and Captain America go into action, and same as Havoc. Meanwhile, Rogue and Scarlet Witch, Scarlet Witch tries to pay his respects to Rogue, to Professor X. Rogue obviously does not like that, basically calling out, Scarlet Witch, you thought you were normal. You're a mutant just like the rest of us. Did you honestly think you were human? Which I thought, that's, you know, lay a bit of truth on her. And apparently, Rogue's absorbing powers do not work on Scarlet Witch. And they are attacked by these new villains and some person. Your foul gifts fell as you suffer the gaze of the goat-faced girl who apparently can... whose wind is alive. And it says, I live to attack. In the wind, which I thought was pretty funny. And we get these new characters. And then the issue, it seemed pretty standard, and then the issue goes into a big monologue inside a big fortress of evil. Kind of reminded me of the Legion of Doom's headquarters. If you look at it, it kind of does. And you see this person talking about how, why would you go after relics when the most powerful relic is unguarded and in clear sight? And says, I will be the one with power. With the brain of Charles Xavier, the Red Skull will eradicate the mutant race. And it's a full-page spread of a dead Charles Xavier, head wide open, and the Red Skull laughing maniacally with his brain in his hand, oozing.
Good Lord in heaven.
I can't wait to see Charles Xavier come back from that.
Right?
While I thought that was a fucking great last page.
If I only had a brain.
Sorry. Which I thought was a great last page. Outside of that, I thought this issue was okay at best. I'm not gonna lie. I know I'm Remender's biggest fan here, but I don't want to sugarcoat anything. I thought it was It wasn't even a team building issue, which I was kind of expecting. We obviously got Cap recruiting Alex, but Thor himself didn't really join the team.
It was set up. It was climate set up.
Yeah, exactly. But that was like,
this is how the emotions are running right now. Yeah, exactly. That's all that was the point to get.
Yeah. Which I thought it was very good, but not great.
And the rogue Scarlet Witch thing is gonna show is to show, oh, here we're gonna foreshadow the conflict and the people that aren't really gonna get along.
Well, I think that's coming out of AVX and the fact that they still don't like her.
Right.
It's still, like, rightfully so, Rogue still blames her.
Right.
But I gotta say, that was like a classic. I was reading that in the Sonic and I was eating my burger and then that last page, like, what the? I actually spat out a little of my burger. I was like, what the hell?
You wasted food!
I ate it again. I'm disgusting. But yeah. Yeah, outside of that, it was pretty okay. I thought Cassidy's art in the beginning was very good and reminded me why I loved him on Astonishing X-Men. But as much as that cool splash page, that imagery of Red Skull holding Charles Xavier's brain, Red Skull looked very photoshopped in, or at least not drawn. I'm not gonna lie when I say that.
He looked a bit techie.
Exactly.
He looked like somebody used a computer to kind of
render it. Yeah. And I thought towards the latter half of the issue, especially when we get to the Rogue Scarlet Witch segments, his art started to seem a little bit more rushed. But I'm like, how much time did you have to draw this? Either that, or he's really, really slow. But other than that, I give it a 3.3 stars out of 3 warriors out of 5. It was very good. But I was left wanting more, which is a good or a bad thing coming in perspective. I definitely want to see the next issue to see what the fuck is Red Skull going to do with Charles Xavier's brain. You know, again, like Taze was saying in our Spider-Man show, reminding that you live in the Marvel Universe and that weird shit can happen like this. So let's just roll with it. And that to me is just what Remender's been doing on all of his books, not just his Marvel books, but for his creator-owned stuff for years and just doing crazy shit. So I give it a 3 out of 5. But let's go to the biggest cynic of them all. Taser, what did you think of Uncanny Avengers number 1?
I laughed because A, I got to see more Cyclops bashing because yeah, he deserves every bit of it he gets. I laughed at that first page with apparently Avalanche going bye-bye, you know? Because hey, my prefrontal lobe has been, you know, cut off to be replaced with some type of technological thingy-majig, and now I just commit acts of terrorism because I'm a thrall of the Red Skull. I raged at Captain America's costume. I'm sorry. I know that they're trying to filter in the something close to the movie version. But fuck you, I don't want that. Just leave the costumes alone. There's no call for it.
Congratulations, you won.
Yeah, right? I won't be seeing your nets.
Oh, God.
I lulled at the hypocrisy of Logan given the sermon for Charles, and then, you know, to have him talk about later on about how he was really thinking something else in what the hell was it, Consequences, you know, he gave this whole nice all flowery speech about, you know, bullshit, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a Wolverine, this is no, get the fuck out of here. I refuse to accept that. But, you know, sure enough, I was vindicated when we get to that book, which, you know, if we have time, I'll review and I'll explain why. The Wanda and Rogue thing, yeah, I could kind of buy some of this, but what I had a problem with was that whole, hey, I'm a lizard bird thing with a spear on my fist, and I'm going to try to kill Rogue, so she dives in front of it rather than tackles him. Yeah, I thought that was just kind of stupid because that's a sacrifice play that really doesn't work, you know? And then, the base of the Red Skull looking like Darth Vader slash the Legion of Doom's headquarters. I didn't pick up on that, but yeah, you are right. It's like right there, like,
it's evil and ominous.
Yeah, and then, you know, last issue, the brain of Charles Xavier. I have the power. I was waiting to see Castle Grayskull in the background and then lightning bolts coming down and shit. You know, I want to see how Charles comes back. I'm going to say give it 5 years and Charles will be back in his body. No explanations given, you know, even though we'll probably see something where his brain's been destroyed or whatever the fuck, you know, we'll probably get that. I laughed a lot reading this. I really did. The absurdity of some of it, the lameness of other parts, it all came to make an absurdly entertaining 20 minutes of my time because I had to stop and, you know, breathe from all the laughter. So I can honestly say I would give this book a 3.7 out of 5. I laughed and I laughed hard. If you enjoyed the insanity for its ridiculousness of AVX, then you got to pick this book up. You really have to. And I'm done.
All right. Well, thank you about that. Arnold, what did you think about Uncanny Avengers number 1?
I like this book. I will say right off the bat that, as we all said, that last page, whether you found the issue completely interesting or not, or, you know, maybe not be your cup of tea, that last page has got to make you think, yeah, I need to know. I need to know what's going on after that scene. It was just so unexpected. And, you know, first thing that pops in my head once I see some shit like that is like, man, Remender, always pulling out some crazy shit. I really just did not see that coming at all. But I liked the issue. Overall, I would say I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. I'm intrigued to see, you know, where we're going with things and what's going to get Havoc to decide that he wants to join the team. And, you know, we're seeing all the conflict building and things might not sit right, as we've already seen with Rogue and the Scarlet Witch. I'm sure she's not going to be too happy about hearing her being on the team. And we haven't even seen why they're being asked to be on the team as of yet. The only person that's really been approached is Havoc. Wolverine, we can kind of assume why he'll be on the team. You know, I would assume he's probably there to keep Wanda in check, if anything. That would be his purpose. I love Thor's little side comments, you know, when Captain America invites Havoc over to have a coffee, and Thor's like, the place we have also makes lattes if you prefer. I do. I don't know why, like, that little thing. Watching Thor try to be human is always entertaining for me, I think, is where most of that stems from. I can't remember the last time we've seen Avalanche, to be completely honest. I'm sure if he wasn't anywhere, it was probably in the
I think he was leading a ride in Utopia, I'm pretty sure was the last time I saw him.
That's right. I remember that, right? During the whole Five Lights shit.
All that bullshit.
I think he was in dealing up with that. But always good to see him. He's a character that I forget about a lot. To be honest, like, not in a bad way. I don't think he's a terrible character or anything like that. To be honest, my first introduction to Avalanche was from the X-Men Evolution cartoon. But again, he's just one that I kind of tend to forget about. But I like where it is. This book really is mostly set up, as you know, Ben has said and I kind of interjected. So just kind of laying the groundwork and the climate of the Marvel Universe post AVX and, you know, seeing what's what. So it's interesting. It's definitely going to keep me coming back to, read the next issue, because that last scene with Xavier's brain, like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Brian, what did you think of Uncanny Avengers? Uncanny Avengers, I gotta get used to saying that, number 1.
Yeah. First of all, I got the Deadpool variant. He totally should have made the team, but of course, they snubbed Deadpool from a premier superhero team. Of course, because they can't handle it. But you know what? That's cool. Whatever. I can let it slide. The first issue was definitely interesting. It's not what I expected out of your standard number one, you know, team book issue. It definitely had a few twists and turns thrown in there. One thing I especially liked was the interaction between Cyclops and, Alex. Because you really see just kind of how far Cyclops has gone from just, you know, what he was supposed to be doing and where he landed now. So it's, you just see the disconnect, and it's really interesting. And the whole thing with Professor Xavier's whole eulogy given by Wolverine stuff. It really does almost make you sad because it's true. This guy died without ever having seen his dream completed, and he was killed by a man who he held as his own son. So that in and of itself is enough motivation for me to read this book to get that kind of character development. But now we have the Red Skull apparently stealing brains and stuff, like he's Dr. Frankenstein or something. I don't know how. I don't know why, but I want to see it happen. I want to see Red Skull just... I don't know what he's gonna do with it, but I want to see him just do something. Like, you know, just that, like, does he like put it in a jar and keep it by his bedside or something? Does he like, you know? I gotta know. So I'll definitely be sticking on with this book for the foreseeable future. And of course, Rick Remender's writing is impeccable. I love the guy. He balances so much in such a short issue. It's incredible. He balances character development and story plot line. It all is balanced very, very good in this issue. And John Cassaday's art, I don't hate, you know? It looks a little bit, you know, weird in some places, but for the most part, I think it will do the book good. And they could always bring in another artist, I guess, if they really wanted to. So, needless to say, I actually thoroughly enjoyed this issue. I thought it was a very good starting point for the series. And hopefully they'll bring Deadpool in the foreseeable future to join the team.
It's called him doing Call Me Maybe, right?
Yeah, really. Whatever. Yep.
All right.
Call Me Maybe, Avengers? Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. Can I just point out that one of the things on the chalkboard, he lists his qualifications, and number 6 has worked with Remender before, which I absolutely love. That's just a little fourth wall breaking.
That's funny.
I know.
All right. Well, there you go. That's the first book of the Marvel Now, as you got to say with excitement every single time because it's in all caps. The first of Marvel Now. We're now in 2 weeks. We get the slew of new number ones, and presumptively we'll be making those books of the weeks. But let's go on to individual reviews. I'm taking, for the first time ever on this show in recorded history, Ultimate Comics X-Men number 17. Because apparently, I read the start of the Ultimate Universe when they reslated last year with Miles Morales and the Ultimates. But I stayed away from Ultimate X-Men because I hated the art and I didn't know where the book was going. So apparently some crazy shit happened, according to Arnold, where Sentinels have been putting mutants in internment camps and all this crazy, crazy shit. And I've been hearing
that happened beforehand. The government, the mutants, and internment camps.
Okay, so basically crazy. Like Captain America's president. There's a Black Spider-Man. What the hell is going on?
Cats and dogs sleeping together. Mass hysteria.
So I figured, okay, why the hell not? This is part 2 of the United We Stand storyline in this book. It's going out all three Ultimate titles. And I gotta say, I haven't read Ultimates yet. I haven't read Ultimate Spider-Man yet. But I love this premise in Ultimate X-Men and the fact that the X-Men are on the run, and they're not really X-Men, but they are. Mutants are outlawed, Washington is decimated, and Kitty Pryde is gathering an army ready to fight for mutants everywhere. It opens up with Kitty Pryde basically saying, "We are the mutant nation, and you know, we are this. We will not look out for violence, but if provoked, we will fight back. We're not going to be bitches." And, I don't know a lot of the history. Some of the things, like Arnold had to fill me on Karen Grant, I forgot that was Jean Grey. Apparently she's in charge of the Seer, whatever the hell that is. I don't know what that is. And she's at the secret base. I just love the fact that these mutants are like, they're basically like guerrilla warfare fighters. I'm like, that's fucking brilliant. That's awesome. And I like this leadership role that this Kitty Pryde has taken. Considering this is the same, it's really weird to see her like this because I know her from Ultimate Spider-Man, more than likely, and she, you know, she was the girlfriend of Peter Parker, and now she's this rebel fighter. It's awesome. I just was generally enjoyed this issue. And it didn't feel like a rehash of old X-Men stories. That's the one thing I never liked about the previous volume Ultimate X-Men comics is because it just felt like they were just rehashing for the sake of rehashing. Whereas this stuff, while it is staying somewhat true to what the X-Men are, it's doing something completely different and fun and just fucking crazy because you can do that in the Ultimate Universe. And of course, you could ending the issue with a full page of the Sentinels bringing hell with them to fight the remaining X-Men. I like to see that. I like that Jimmy Hudson is still in here. I remember him from the that miniseries where Jeff Loeb. Yeah, the last good thing.
I don't think it ever finished.
I think it did. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I like the character. And I'm glad that he's still here kicking. I didn't know there was an Ultimate Quentin Quire, let alone hooking up with Ultimate Rogue, and who apparently can touch people. I thought that's interesting.
That was just recently developed too.
Okay. So why is what's explain to me this? What's Karen Grant's deal? Why is she against? I figure she
again, like I said, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not even sure where she stands on the side. I know earlier she was having a conversation with Nick Fury, and I think she's supposed to be like a double agent for Nick Fury. She was working for Nick Fury supposedly, but she may not be. I don't think it's been completely explained. I really do have to go back and check it.
Okay, because that's interesting. But I give this a 4 out of 5. The art had a little bit of problems with it. It felt a little clunky at points. But just as an idea and in terms of execution of the story and the characters, I got caught up easily. Apparently there was an issue before this that dealt with the United Weed Stand. I didn't feel like there was. I felt like this was a perfect place to jump on. Namely the cover of Kitty Pryde as fugitive on her. But yeah, I mean, it seems like the Ultimate books are back to doing what they are and basically just doing batshit crazy things, which if you can do anywhere, you might as well do it here. I give this a 4 out of 5. Check Ultimate X-Men out. I don't think you've ever heard me say that on the show at all.
But I didn't know those words existed in that order.
Neither did I. But let's go up next from one X-Men book to another with the most tragic moment of the week with Wolverine X-Men number, is it 18? Is it 17?
Yes, sir. 18.
All right. You want to... It's raining. I'm not crying. It's raining. It's raining.
That's
tears. Tears are
I
flowing.
I would say this issue is going on concurrently with the last issue of ABX. This is more an inside look at the things that are going on in the school as the final battle is going on through ABX. This is right before Xavier bites it. Sorry, spoiler if you haven't heard it by now. we focus on the Stepford Cuckoos who are keeping an eye on the fight, so to speak, just by viewing all of the lights of mutants that are still alive and fighting, and you know, you see them all in one big cluster over the air of Utopia. Interestingly enough, I found out I was not aware that the Cuckoos are not considered like school members or anything like that.
The Utopia people. That's why.
Cerebra. Say again.
They were with the Utopia people, that's why they're not students.
Yeah, they were with Emma, I would think. They stuck with her for, you know.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's right. I thought that was weird for a second. Forgot all about Husk, a character that just comes in every now and then, and she's losing her shit. I think we're going to chalk it up, her freak out to everything that's going on, and how she couldn't control her classroom. And Quentin Quire is forcing who's this Glob dude, I forget his name.
It's Glob.
Herman?
Billy Glob.
It's code name, I think.
Okay. The two of them were having it out, and Quentin Quire is literally making him hit himself, making Glob hit himself. And for the first time ever since we have seen the introduction of this character, Edie laughs, and everybody instantly freezes as if somebody has pulled out a gun. You know, nobody's ever heard her laugh before. And it's her and Brew kind of hanging out together, and you find out that she found this new church that makes her feel better about herself and that kind of jazz, and she runs, not runs away, but she sneaks out of school rather to go and meet said priest in this church. You come to find out that it's actually a robot created by Cade Kilgore, the Black King of these new Hellfire youngins that are still running around not being stabbed in the chest. And Brew goes off to find her. Mind you, while this is going on, Kitty decides that she's going to throw a dance party to lighten up the mood in school while people are literally outside fighting the potential end of the universe. She throws a dance party, appropriately named Dance Like There's No Tomorrow. Brew is patiently waiting for Edie to come back, and she does come back, but ends up dancing with Quentin.
He's in love.
Heartbroken about it because, you know, he was falling for...
I've been there so many fucking times of all
life. It's sad.
bet you have.
Right on. And you know, while all of that's going on, we're flashing back to the fight that's going on outside, and the light, the Cuckoos have just noticed that Xavier died. After seeing Edie disappear for a while, Brood decides he's gonna follow her and finds the, priest that she's talking to. He attacks it, and you find out that it was actually just a robot, and Edie was being sent over, or we find out that Glob is a double agent, or is filtering information to the new Hellfire Club, and, it hasn't been that much explanation as to that yet, but I'm intrigued what that's all about. And then, sadly, as it goes along to clean up loose ends, and so he can't tell anybody, our good man, Cade Kilgore, shoots Brew in the head. And, you know, as if seeing him laying there was, you know, that was hurtful too. And just the way that I like that panel, that last page rather, was just really well done. I like how we had the map of Cerebra, and, you know, you saw the dot, and they zoomed in closer on it, and then you saw it dissipate, and then there was no dot, and then him lying dead on the floor. It was just so sad.
He got left with a splitting headache. Oh!
I haven't felt that bad since Ted Kord caught that bullet.
Oh, God.
It was, oh, my God. You fucking ripped my heart out, threw it on the ground. First he loses ID to Quentin Quire. Then he gets shot in the head.
Leave Brew alone!
But look, it's not like Edie was ever gonna take and fuck him.
No, right. Come on.
Like, he was gonna give her a choice. He would have manned up eventually and gone all brewed on him.
He would have popped out two of those impregnato things. Would have stabbed her in the back.
He looks sweet. He looks just like you. Kill me! Maybe later. I'm down.
But, you know, it was all in all, it was a good issue. I would give it a 3.9 out of 5. Still one of my more favorite X-Men books on the stands, and yeah, it's good to get a book that is somewhat dealing with AVX, but not directly dealing with AVX.
You can read these tie-ins and not have read AVX. What? You could have read these tie-ins and not have read AVX and been
different. Yeah, exactly. You know, you still would have been okay getting a little bit of a gist of a blurb saying what's going on outside. You know, the whole book is a total meanwhile at Jean Grey School for Mutants. You know, we've got this big ass fight going on, but here, look, what's going on with the normal folks and the kids who aren't out there fighting the world ending fight? But I'm digging it. I'm interested to see where it's going now that AVX is done and, you know, what the atmosphere is going to be like, if we're going to get any new, members with everything that's gone down at Utopia. Is anybody from there going to stay? Are they going to go back, go on their own way? I'm sure we will soon find out, but sad times for Brew. It's upsetting.
I just want to make a quick interjection. I'm sorry to interrupt you again, Arnold, but I just want to say I appreciate the integrity you took in not making a Scientology joke when talking about the priest in the church. I really appreciate that. It shows a lot of restraint on your part, dude.
Nope. What? I guess, there was one other moment. I love the fact that, if you're paying attention, I love that the DJ at this party is Lockheed.
Yeah, that's right.
He's got a hand on a record and he's going to work. I thought that was fucking hysterical.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. I love that Deathlock is like the old nun at the youth group party who's like, I'm not sure how I feel about this kind of dancing that they're doing here. Should I go break this up? And Kitty's like, oh, you've got a lot to learn about dancing. And another moment with our great good man Dupe with the cameo, you know, Warbird says she finds this dancing boring and there's not any bloodshed, and Dupe says something in his language to which she replies, my room, 5 minutes. So they're going to go run off and do all kinds of crazy shit, you know? There's just lots of little funny moments in this book that just keep me so entertained. If you're, you know, if you're really not paying attention, you do miss them. But that one with Lockheed DJing killed me. I think that was one of my favorite parts of the whole issue. And that's
it's a great book. Let's go to Mr. Taser with AVX Consequences number 1 of 5. More Scott Summers hate.
Yes! Yes! I like this book. You know why? Because it was more rubbing the shit in Scott Summers' face. This was a fairly linear book. There was very little back and forth between, you know, too many characters. It was mostly this segment, that segment done, this segment, that segment done, blah, 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 on and on and on. First segment has Wolverine and the kids from the academy taking, you know, Blackbird over to Wakanda to try to help out. They actually attempted to do something that only one other mutant tried to do, and, you know, they kind of get put down for it. And oddly enough, that person was Storm. And they get shot at, you know? I mean, you see this plane come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, big freaking energy cannon, chow, 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 and, you know, she's like, no, Logan, you gotta run away because they don't want you here. Run, run! I'll put up cloud cover! And you see them backing away, and then she comes on board the plane. You know, they're like, what the hell's going on here? And she explains to him that, you know, Namor, you know, the country had been attacked by Namor, who was a mutant under a mutant flag. And yes, even though my husband was T'Challa, I was also a mutant under that same flag. So, therefore, mutants are persona non grata in Wakanda. And, you know, Wolverine's all like, Summers. And she's like, well, you know, you're simply not wanted. I'm a criminal, you know? And last panel is T'Challa standing there watching him leave, and I'm like, bitch! You know?
Run, bitch!
Yeah, you know, like, F her! Next segment is Scott Summers being taken to jail, and he's got, you know, more funky headgear. And the warden actually breaks it down to him how this jail's supposed to work, and Scott assumes that, you know, I'm there because you're gonna do something bad to me and this, that, the other thing. And the warden tells him, look, you're no different than anybody else. We're not treating you any different. You're nobody special when it comes to what we need to do. You know, to prove his point, he demonstrates the new, bio-restrictive mutant power collar. You know, he throws it once on Scott, you know, so that he gets an idea of what's going on and how this thing, you know, will hit him if he tries to use his, optic blocks. There's this one line here which I love. One of two, actually. The warden talking to Scott. You understand, I'm sure. You were a superhero, Mr. Summers. Making people feel safe is what you were all about. Until you became a murderer, of course. And Scott replies, so, I'm the proof of concept test case. And you're just throwing me into a prison block? And he tells him, well, no. You know, you're not even the first week. They cleared out a wing of the prison. He's not even the first mutant in that block. You know, Scott assumed that, you know, he was, you know, going to be the person that they make a test case out of. He's not the first one there. We actually see somebody else. And he tells them, you know, last line is, think of that. You're not even prisoner one, Mr. Summers. You really are just another criminal. There you go. I just love that. And they walk away, and he's sitting there going,
Rasper.
You got Hope on top of Avengers Tower burning up something that Cable had given to her. And, you know, Wanda and Cap walk up to her. And Cap is wearing this god-awful armor. I'm sorry, it's not a costume anymore. It's supposed to be functional, and it looks disgusting. He's got a chin strap. Why the fuck has he got a chin strap? Ah! Anyway. They're all talking to her like, Hope, what do you want to do? And Wanda's like almost a full head taller than her. And I'm trying to figure out exactly how's that supposed to happen, but, you know, whatever. And they basically ask Hope, what does she want to do? She's like, I think I want to be a teen. I want to be a girl and normal. Yay! You know, I'm just a girl. Girly girl. I could care less about that. We get Captain Marvel and Iron Man. They're hunting down Magneto, and they think that they've actually managed to trail him to a spot in where was this supposed to have been? Mexico, you know.
They dive on the spot.
You know, they're not giving him a chance. They're just going to take him out and take him out quick. And Namor is on the run already, you know, so they don't get him. And we finish it, the last story is, Cap going to, Wolverine to, you know, trying to get him to talk to Cyclops. You know, maybe Cyclops might be able to take and help quell some of the unrest and whatever that's been going on. And Logan tells him in no uncertain terms, yeah, and this will go back to what I was laughing about in, Uncanny Avengers, where he says that I had to give Charles's eulogy today. And everything that he said was the stuff that Charles preached day in and day out, and what I want the kids to learn, and what I know I should be feeling up here in my head. This is what I know to do. But do you know what I feel? You know what I really want to do? And he pops his claws. No? And Cap goes, I understand your position. Thank you for being open with me. I can completely understand it. You know, that Scott Summers betrayed Xavier, and not just by killing him, by doing what he did. He betrayed the Vision. The Vision.
Broke his heart.
He betrayed the Vision. But you know, and then sure enough, you know, instead of, you know, Cap had asked Logan to go talk to him. Logan says no, so of course, naturally, he ends up in prison there with a couple of six packs, you know, and acting all casual as fuck. So, you know, that's like, okay, Logan, good job there, dick. I enjoyed the story. You know, anything to make, Scott Summers look bad at this point, I am thoroughly enjoying. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I actually have to give this book, I'm going to give it a 4.5 Warriors out of 5.
Well, I'm glad somebody liked that book. Last but not least, Mr. Brian Powers, I forgot you were reviewing, but take it away.
No, I didn't even decide until like 5 seconds ago. I'm reviewing Marvel Universe versus the Avengers number 1. Great read. We dive back into the Versus world where all of a sudden a plague breaks out and everyone goes all cannibal on everybody else. And we're told basically a lot, we're told the whole story through Hawkeye's point of view, essentially, how he sees everything just kind of slowly degrading over time, you know. Like, he's collaborating with Nick Fury in the beginning, trying to figure out what the hell happened, Avengers Towers and Ruins. And it starts off really emotional because the first, like, three or four pages, has Hawkeye killing Abby because she's infected. And it's just, it only goes down from there. But the rest of the Avengers have rallied around trying to figure out, you know, trying to fight off all these new cannibals that have been appearing everywhere. And it looks to be just a losing battle, you know? More and more is popping up, more and more of their own are getting infected, and, you know, so we just sort of see the slow kind of degradation of this particular universe. And there were a few scenes that really got my attention. One of them in particular showed Hawkeye and Cap taking out a few civilians. And Cap just, like, tucks and goes and barrels through all of them. He just turns to Clint. He's like, thanks for the backup, Clint. Couldn't have done that without you. And he's like, I didn't get a single shot off. And it sort of alludes to what comes later. But we'll get to that in a second. We eventually see the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. as all the backup disappears and stuff. We see, we just see a lot of weird things. We see heroes and villains teaming up with each other. Like, we see Daken at one point and Bullseye. They're teaming up with, like, people like Hawkeye and shit. And they have to kill Daredevil at one point. And everyone's tested daily for the infection and shit.
Spider-Man gets infected, don't forget.
Spider-Man takes a nice chunk out of Pym's arm. Just like, nom, 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 nom. He likes him some Ant-Man. Yeah, him and Beast go to town on Pym, and that's just, it's nasty. It's brutal. And another scene we get in particular, which I know Taser is particularly fond of, because we were talking about it before the show started, it's a scene where Hawkeye is talking to Jessica Jones. Luke Cage has been infected, and he's just rampaging through his house. He's killed Squirrel Girl. She's dead on the floor.
Woo!
And she's on the phone like, he's infected. Hawkeye goes, are you sure? And she goes, yeah, I'm sure. And then finally, last time we hear is, oh, God, Luke, don't. And we can assume there safely that Luke Cage ate out Jessica Jones. But not in that way, kids, because that would be immoral. Essentially, what we get from this, the end of the first issue, is the death of Captain America. We find out that the enhanced strength that he was used to barrel through all the civilians, yeah, he was kind of being infected as a cannibal. So, tough. We get Thor rallies the rest of the Avengers together for one last stand against all the infected people in New York City. But, you know, they just keep falling and falling one by one. And it looks as if Thor's about to get a nice chunk taken out of him, when all of a sudden, on flights of wings and whatever, who else should show up to save the day but fucking Victor Von Doom? He's found a cure. Well, isn't that just all well and good? And that caps off the first issue of Marvel Universe vs. the Avengers. You know, it's your typical hack and slash and, you know, apocalyptic, oh god, the humanity's turning type story. What'd you say?
It's God of War?
No, it's not God of War. It's got more plot than that. No, it's just, you know, it's your typical post-apocalyptic, hey, humanity is turning into something awful, we have to fight back, we don't know who we can trust, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, we just get a lot of the basics. And not to say it's not entertaining. It certainly is something to see how these people, like, just interact and fight with one another. You see some of the oddest team-up combinations I think I've ever thought possible in comic books. And I think we get one scene here. Yeah, one scene we have Hawkeye and Hitmonkey doing just capping people with their arrows and guns, respectively. And it's crazy. And it's a pretty decent issue. I am interested to see how Victor Von Doom plays into it, because keep in mind, for a book that's not all that, you know, advanced in its plot, we already have two series of continuity for this stuff. Punisher came first, Punisher versus the Marvel Universe, and then Wolverine versus the Marvel Universe. We've already seen it through their perspectives, and we kind of know what kind of endpoints it leads to, but we don't really see much of... We kind of saw at the end of Wolverine there was kind of a little bit of a pocket of humanity still trying to find a cure for it. And I didn't see Dr. Doom in there. I don't know what happened to him. So it's either we're assuming he dies at some point, or he just kind of decides, hey, fuck you all, I'm going to go chill in my castle and be awesome because I'm Dr. Doom.
I'm betting that's probably what happened.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. Yeah, so, you know, it's a really, really fun read with some good moments. You know, moments you're just like, ha, that's good. But then other moments where it's like, ooh, oh, ooh.
This is in continuity with all the other versus Marvel Universe books?
No, the Deadpool one is out of continuity, if that's what you're thinking. The Deadpool one does not count here, but the Punisher and Wolverine ones do count. They are both linked in with this one.
Did not know that.
Oh, mother fuck.
Yeah, I don't know how heavily it is enforced Taser, but from what we can tell, it is in continuity with the other two series.
Okay.
So yeah, that caps up the first issue. Victor Von Doom comes in to save the day, and he kind of looks like something out of H.R. Giger's nightmares a little bit. you know, a good solid read, 3.5 out of 5, maybe 4 if I'm stretching it, but, you know, basic read, it'll be good, and it should pick up around the middle, so we'll see.
I'll say this, it's Jonathan Mayberry. Jonathan Mayberry has kind of cut his teeth on doing, you know, sick scientific zomboid storylines,
yep.
And the one thing I noticed in this is that he actually, I didn't read the other two, so
okay.
I don't know how they played out, but in this... He really accelerated through that whole, you know, worsening situation crap. Because that's something, if you read any of his books, he actually has time to take and develop, and you see how we get to the state that we're at. This
yeah.
one, he leapfrogs over shit. You know, I mean, the bit
yeah, the
where,
entire fall is pretty much encapsulated in this one issue right here. This is about
yeah,
it.
I mean, it's a very quick one. You know, Spider-Man, and I forgot who that was, that actually break into the FF Tower, and they go, I mean, it figures to be Spider-Man, because you would have the intelligence to do so.
Yeah, it's
they go right
Spider-Man
after Reed
and Beast.
And then fucking, yeah, there you go. Those two. You know, those two would have the temerity to do it, and they would have the, I'll say, rudimentary intelligence to kind of figure it out.
And of course, Thing is already there, and he just goes off, you know, he's
watching the Hulks in the background go at it.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was like, oh. But,
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out who would have infected Cage. You know, think about that. We're talking Cage here. Who would
yeah.
have?
Yeah. Well, it's
adamantium needle.
Airborne.
It's not. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, it's airborne because the way described, it's actually explained back in the Punisher series, which is the first one. He sort of inadvertently caused
continuity
the whole crisis.
In a versus the oh my god, my
I know, yeah, and it's actually Punisher's fault that the world is the way it is. It actually is bad.
Oh, that
he was tracking, yeah, he was tracking a Russian biochemical weapon through some mafia gangsters or whatever, and he accidentally broke it open and let it into the water supply when he was taking them all out. So his little bullet screen thing actually caused the end of the world.
Oops, my bad.
Yeah.
Frank Castle. I'll say this, though. Like I said, Jonathan Mayberry's kind of cut his teeth on this kind of stuff. I hope, having gotten past this, that we get a little more substance to the story than what we got in this one, because it was very fast and very light in my opinion. I still kind of enjoyed it, you know, because it was funny. It's funny to watch Hawkeye's reaction to it, because, you know, they're really playing up his, I have new superpowers, I'm just a really good marksman with arrows. You know, they've been playing that up, you know, and I want to see how that develops, because we'll probably end up in the next issue or two, we'll probably see him interacting with Doom a lot or whatever the fuck, and God only knows why, you know. Yeah. I look forward to the next issue. I just leave it like that. I thought it wasn't a bad read, but it just needed it needed a little more body to it, you know, a little more detail. I thought, but I'll be there for the next one, you know.
And also, just to cap off the brief thing about Hawkeye, he actually postulates. It was kind of just in passing, but he also kind of thinks he's like, "Oh, I don't need to be tested. I'm immune." So he thinks he's immune to everything, but they don't know for sure that anyone is immune to it. Although, if you read Wolverine actually lasted a long damn time, so.
Oh, he actually converts too?
Well, no, the funny thing is, I don't want to spoil it if anyone wants to read it, but okay, spoilers alert. At the end of the Wolverine series, Wolverine is shown to be alive and well, granted minus a limb, but he's still alive, and he's hacking away for humanity, so. Yeah, but he loses an arm permanently, so it's like, it's weird.
Hmm.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, Jonathan Avery, he does what he does best here. He's the best there is at what he does, and that just happens to be zombies. This. Yeah, pretty much. Well, not zombies so much as just cannibals. Uh-huh. Maybe 28 Days Later zombies.
Well, it seemed all of us this week really enjoyed our comics, and that's going to wrap up this show, episode number 121. Thank you for listening. If you said hi to Arnold at New York Comic Con, or if you picked up, or if you mentioned us on Twitter, whatever, we appreciate it. We hope you had a good time. TheWarriors3@.com is our website. TheWarriors3@gmail.com is our email. Drop a line there. We'll answer your questions on the show. And of course, I have news. I have officially picked my members for the upcoming.
You have nudes? Woohoo!
Yeah, they're right next door. I'm gonna leak them on the internet and say somebody hacked my phone, because I'm a bitch.
You heard it here, folks. He admitted he's a bitch.
The Indie Comics Show and the D Cup Show, I've officially chosen members. It'll be a little while before those shows are actually up and running, just from scheduling conflicts and just wanting to just figure out a time to do it. But they are happening, and I look to bring you not only the RPG show, which Brian and I are going to be recording later this week. That episode will be released later, probably around Saturday, I would assume. And also, look for D Cup soon, and look for the Indie Comic
Show
soon. Don't know what the Indie Comic Show is going to be, but look for those soon. Do y'all have anything to say before we say bon voyage?
I've almost got the Amazing Spider-Man review done. Almost. Would have had it done tonight, but unfortunately I got home late.
All right, well, with that notion, as I fall asleep, because Arnold's tiredness is now...
Wait, can I say one thing? Can I say one thing?
Oh, you know.
Please?
Go ahead.
Go for it. Okay. Fuck you, Richard Sherman. I'm done.
I don't know.
That's all I gotta say.
Is that a Seahawks reference?
He's the dude that trolled Tom Brady after the game. So, fuck
you
him.
You mad, bro? You mad?
Yeah, I'm mad. I'm gonna bitch slap you, you bastard.
We'll see y'all next week for episode number 122. Have a good week,
ladies and gentlemen.
See ya!
Bye, everybody.
Pass out, Arnold.